This is an interview with Mrs. Hasha Afshower, 9853 Haldeman Avenue, Philadelphia 19115, OR38587, on May 10th, 1982, with Josie Fisher. Can you tell me where and when you were born and a little bit about your childhood?
Well, I was born in Lodz, Poland, 1923, January the 7th, 1923.
January?
The 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big city, Lodz. My maiden name is Honigman.
How do you spell that?
Well, my real name is Chaya Sara Honigman. Honigman you spell with a K.
K-O-N-I-G.
K, Honigman. It's K, M-A-N, Honigman. H-O-N-I-K-M-A-N.
What kind of area did you live in Lodz?
Well, I lived in an area, it was, say like here, it's called the Northeast, it was called Hojny. I spell it to you. C-H-O, wait a minute, put me that is not.
And that's spelled C-H-O-J-N-Y. Can you tell me what that community was like?
It must have been there about 250 Jewish families. Majority of them were middle class.
Was that the Jewish section of
no.
Lodz? There were several?
There were several. There was a very religious section where the ghetto was.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the opposite side of the city.
Mm-hmm.
It was a new section. It's like here, where the ghetto, the Lodz ghetto was the old section. And then, well, mostly were the butchers living there. My father was a butcher.
In the section where you lived?
Where I lived.
Were mainly butchers?
Butchers. And the majority were Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
But Lodz was divided. There were Poles and there were Germans. Because Lodz belonged one time to Germany.
So you were living then in a community that was mixed religiously?
Yes, very much.
And what was your experience with that?
Well, I grew up with him. I had girlfriend, Gentiles. I went to a strictly Catholic school.
Catholic school?
Yeah, because it was close by.
Was this a public school? But it had mainly Catholic
yes.
children?
Yes. The nuns were teaching their religion and and then got up in the, before classes, they had to cross themselves and say the prayer. And
what happened with you when that
oh,
was
we
done?
Didn't pray. Religion, we went to a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own religion. And it's like we had to bring in our marks. But
was there any anti-Semitism in that
it was.
Setting?
It was. We grew up with the kids. But once in a while you could hear Jew go to Palestine, Jew this. And we were raised not to go too much between the goyim because they will beat you up, they'll push you around. I had a family of six, we were six children at home. I had two older brothers and one older sister. So my brothers were raised differently already. They were not told not to go with the goyima. If they hit you, hit them back. But still, you could feel. I suppose when you get older, when you understand what anti-Semitism is, you feel it.
When you say your brothers were raised differently, was that because your parents' approach was different or the times were different?
No, my parents were already. They said, don't let me push around.
And what happened if your brothers hit back?
Nothing. The neighbors were complaining. Ashaygits, alobus. You know what that means. But they didn't let themselves. My oldest brother was They said that if he would be here, he would have been a movie star. Was over 6 feet tall, slim, tall, and strong. So, it was a different, but it was terrible anti-Semitism. I went to school in Europe, you know, you finished 7 classes. And then I went to my mother and my grandmother decided I should be a milliner. So they sent me to be a milliner, and I hated it. But I was about, you know, I finished school. I was 13 and a half.
And the millinery training was a program, a school program, or an apprenticeship?
Well, it's apprentice. You go in for 3 years. And I went twice a week to evening school. You had to go because, first, if you want to open a store yourself, you had to have a diploma. And you couldn't get a diploma if you didn't go finish that school. But the war came. I didn't finish it.
Let me go back for a minute. During your public school years,
yes,
did you also have Hebrew school training outside?
Yes,
of the public
outside.
School?
Outside.
Your family belonged to a synagogue?
Oh, sure. We had a synagogue in the same building where we lived. First, we walked a long way to the synagogue where my grandparents were going.
This was an Orthodox synagogue?
Yeah,
went?
Very Orthodox.
Uh-huh.
But then there was a group of butchers living in our neighborhood. And those butchers made their own synagogue, you know, the Jewish thing. But in this wasn't the same building where we lived. We lived in a big building.
Oh, I see.
So we grew up with the, if it came Simchas Torah, you know, when they were reading the Torah, they were reading it in our kitchen, in our living room, like you're saying. Because Simchas Torah, you read 3 times the Torah. You read it, you know. So for the kids, for the little kids, they read it in our apartment. So my mother prepared cookies and all kind of things. And so it was, I grew up with a synagogue. Friday it was my duty to clean out everything and see that the lights work and everything should, the candles should be prepared. And so we grew up with it.
So there was a special room in the building that was the actual synagogue?
It was not a room. It was a beautiful, big place with big paintings on the wall, you know, the 12, how you call it, the Jewish Shvutim, how you say it, I forgot already, you know, Levites and all.
The tribes.
Yeah, tribes, see? And it was beautiful paintings on the wall. It was a beautiful synagogue. In the middle was like a thing standing there, and there they were reading the Torah. My sister got married in that synagogue. Mm. So.
But this was built as a part of your apartment building, or this was built
in the building.
After the building was already.
Oh, the building was a 3-story, big, but a big building. There were a lot of people living there. But one side of the building on the first floor was empty, and that was the synagogue. It was divided. One part was for the men, and the other part was for the women.
Was it originally constructed that way?
No.
Or this was built, this was
it
constructed
was constructed,
after?
Yeah, inside, yeah.
What was the name of that synagogue?
The Kitzuvish, the Butcher Synagogue. The Butcher Synagogue.
And it was only for this community of butchers in your
Well,
area,
just anybody could come in, mm-hmm. but mostly the butchers supported that synagogue. Mm-hmm.
Now, did you go for some kind of Hebrew school training within the synagogue?
Not
as
in the
well?
Synagogue.
Not
we went to a rabbi. There was a rabbi who was teaching kids, you know, the boys. You went to a class. And the rabbi was an old man. I remember him, a skinny little guy with a long beard. And he was teaching us Aleph, Bais. The beginning, the Rebbetzin was teaching us. Then, when we came up higher class, the rabbi took us over.
This was an after-school class?
After school.
And this was for girls, or this was a mixed class?
The boys, no, girls were separate and boys were
separate.
Because the boys were taught at that time differently, and the girls were. The girl was taught in Europe to read and to write. Mm-hmm. That's all. A boy was taught Torah. Mm-hmm. It was different. So we had to go there. The class demanded the school because we had to have our marks. And then the Jewish upbringing, we had to...
Your family was observant?
Very much, mm-hmm. very much. My father was a kosher butcher. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to bed if I didn't say the bruches, and I didn't get up in the morning if I didn't say the bruches, and I didn't take a piece of cake and bread in my mouth if I didn't have to say it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you change a little bit.
Now you were telling me about your time in the millinery apprenticeship.
Yeah, well, I went there and I didn't like it. I was very good in it, but I didn't like it. You know, children don't like to be taught to do things. But I went there for 2.5 years. And I went twice a week to school at night. But the war started and I had to drop out.
You had mentioned to me before that your father had not been in the service in Poland.
No, no.
None of the members of your family
no,
had
been No, no, no. My brother, when my brother was called to the service, this year there were so many born that the quota was, he wanted to go so badly. Mm-hmm. For what?
This
for
was
Poland.
In the 30s.
Yeah, for big Poland. But he wanted to go, and he was the type to go. But they rejected him. Not that they rejected him, he didn't be capable, but they had enough. Yeah.
What was the thinking in your family when Hitler came to power in Germany?
Well, my father, may his soul rest in peace, it's like a premonition. He said this, big cloud coming over our head. He said, something bad is going to come. And I remember as children, I was too young, but my older sister and brothers, Father, you always bring the worst out. He said, look, I know what life can be. And he lived on the, you know, when they remember Germany, my father and my mother, because Lodz was under German in the First World War. They were gentlemen. They were staying in my grandmother's house. But they, somehow by the Jewish paper was always in the house. And they were reading a lot and they heard. And then my mother had 2 sisters and a brother living in Frankfurt am Main, Germany. And they were writing letters that it's not good. In 1936, one of the sisters came back with 2 children to visit the family from Germany. And she said she thinks that's the last time she's going to come because it's not good.
Were they thinking of leaving Germany?
They were thinking, but it was not so easy to run, but they left. She lived through Shanghai.
Mm.
Yeah. But my parents knew something bad is coming.
Did they think it would affect you in Poland?
Oh, Dan. You see, we lived in that city where the Volksdeutsch, the German, every second person was a Volksdeutsch.
Mm-hmm.
People I grew up with, my sister and brothers, they grew up with him. They were considered Poles. Soon Hitler came. They were Volksdeutsch. They were part German. And they were going around with machine guns in the street. So you couldn't trust nobody.
What do you mean they were going around with machine guns?
The Volksdeutsch could go around with a machine gun in the street. You're looking for Jews.
Were there incidents before the war of
Not
Volksdeutsch
before.
Attacking?
That was during the war.
Okay.
That was the
war. Before the war. Were there Nazi groups in your town?
They were. I heard they were. I know my oldest brother had contact with them. They knew there were Germans, real Germans who lived there and they grew up with the Poles and with us and had business. And then you saw 3-4 weeks before the war, 6 weeks the store closed up, and they disappeared. When the Germans came to our city, the first things they came in as generals and seeked out everybody who did him something, just talk to him bad. This was in the, because the city where I come from was, I would say, 60% Germans.
Was your father ever in a position where he thought of leaving?
No, my father didn't want to leave, but my brothers and my sister wanted to leave for Birbidjan. He was so desperate, my brother, because my brother and I, my both brothers and I belonged to Beitar, you know, the organization. My sister was Shoma Hatzir. She wanted to go to Israel, but where the parents let go a child in Europe? My oldest brother, I remember he was about 16 or 17 years old, packed his things short before the war and went to a port city in Poland, where boats go to Palestine. And he wanted to go on a boat, worked. A man couldn't do it, a girl couldn't do that. He came to Gdańsk, where the port city, and he came back. He couldn't leave his family. Mm-hmm. And he came back. And then I remember Saturday, and we ate at the table, and the boys always brought up, and my sister, that we should go. My father knew a lot about farming, because where he came from, they had a lot of farmland. And
this was where?
Before the war.
In the Lodz area, outside of Lodz?
My father was not from Lodz. My father was from a different town. He was from Dąbrowa, that was Oberschlesien. And they had a lot of ground, his parents. So he knew a lot of things. And my brother said, let's go to Birbidjan. We get a piece of ground. And my father said,
so you would not go without your parents?
No. My brother, the second time, did the same thing. He, when everybody escaped to Russia, he went with him. With my brother-in-law went and some friends of his. And he went until Lwów. And he came back. And some of them lived through, and they are alive until today. He couldn't leave his parents. And he perished in the war. He perished in the partisans. So we were too much of a close family. I had my grandparents there, and my aunts and uncles and cousins. So it was too close, everything. So it was not so easy. But you felt the Jews were hated. And what did I know? I was too young. I did my things, and I belonged to Beitar, and mostly what I had my spare time, I spent the organization between Jews. Mm-hmm. Parents had troubles. Kids, what do kids know? I was through with school, and mostly I spent it, but I know what was going on. It was bad. When I worked at the millinery, and I came home, you know, in Europe, you close the store 7. And came home at 9, my mother always said, be careful when you go. The schutz and the goyim staying there in the corner, they shouldn't hurt you. And I know what was going on, and it was very bad. But a child has a different feeling about such things.
Well, you're talking about the mid-30s now?
37, 38.
Mm-hmm.
38.
What happened right before the invasion? Did you have any feeling that things were going to be that involved?
How could you know? How could you feel? Could somebody imagine it's going to be like that? We know it was bad. I was still working. And I remember there was in the streets big mobilization, and everybody was running back and forth, and the store started to, you see, this city where I lived, they didn't even bomb them. They're pretending they're bombing it. A few planes came over, and they dropped some bombs out of the city, because they knew that would belong to them. There was a big, where I come from, they used to call Polish Manchester. They were just factories of making materials and all kinds. Why should they bomb it? They knew they were gonna have it. Mm. And 60% was German, it belonged to the Germans. So it was not wise to bomb it. But, and I remember some boys went to call them to the military, and a lot of friends of ours. But it was such a turmoil. The Poles were running this way and this way, and people came from different... I never saw it in my life. I was too young, so I couldn't understand. I know something was going on. It's bad.
Mm-hmm. So there were not actually bombings then?
No.
Of your town?
Not of my town.
Was there a physical invasion of the German army into the town?
Then it started, when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
1939... May the 3rd. The war didn't last long, the Polish war. 10 days.
May of 1939?
September. September. Yeah, I still have May. September the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And the Poles are such nothing people. You tell them to holler, they will holler. They don't think for themselves. They were going to the front and were screaming, we will show the Germans. 2 days later, they were Germans themselves. So the war didn't last too long.
What happened to you and your family during that?
My family was right away affected by that.
In what way? Can you describe it?
Short before the war, about 2 weeks before the war, my father being a butcher, they used to bring wagons of cows and all kind of thing. They let him out from the wagons, and one bull started to run, and my father came on, and the bull fell on him, stepped on him, and pushed him down to the ground and broke his leg. And his leg was up to here in a cast.
Up to his hip?
Yeah.
Cast.
And my father was a very... He was tall, he was about 6 feet tall. And he weighed about over 200 pounds. He was not fat, but he was strong.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine with a cast like that and then the war? And
so he was at home in this cast?
He was home, walking with a cane. And my two brothers and the boys around from the neighborhood, even Poles, it was, they said right away, you know, before the war started, they said if they invade some places, the Germans, they take the young boys and send them right away to the army, or they send them someplace. So all the boys escaped. All the boys ran away.
You're talking about the Polish and the
Polish
Jewish.
And the Jewish. You know, like my brothers grew up with a bunch of Polish boys that went to school. They hated each other behind the backs, but they went out together. So they ran away.
Your brothers went?
My both brothers, and a bunch of other boys, and a bunch of goyim, the Gentiles.
Where did they go?
They ran to the direction of Warsaw.
So when you're talking about the brothers who tried to go to Birobidzhan and to Palestine,
yes.
You're talking about before the war. Those instances
happened before the war.
Before the war.
Before.
And they came back.
They came back.
Okay.
Now this happened 1939, September the 4th. They ran away already. Mm-hmm. September the 4th they ran away. And they were running just the direction where they were bombing and shooting and bombing and shooting. They ran with everybody. And it came back such things, this one saw my brother killed, and this one saw that was not true. People were talking. And my brothers were, and I was running around and looking for them. God, and I couldn't tell my parents.
You stayed in Lodz.
I stayed in Lodz.
And your brothers went on their way to Warsaw.
Yes.
And you were getting these stories filtered back.
That's right.
And your parents didn't know that they had gone towards Warsaw?
Oh, they know they ran away. They went this direction, but they didn't hear. And there were places in Lodz where they kept prisoners. You know, they caught a bunch of such boys, say, for instance, or, and they kept them in outside in a big yard or somewhere.
Who is they?
The Germans.
This is after the Germans were already in the city,
though. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they kept them there. And I was running from one corner of the city to the other one, looking if I could find my brothers there. Then somebody told me, he said, Hashi, you know what? They're bringing in wounded, you know, people who were shot, people who were killed. And then this in this hospital, there is a Honigman, Martin Honigman, Martin Honigman, was so far. And I was only 16 years old. And I didn't want, and the Germans were already in, you were not allowed, there were a curfew. And you had to wear right away the white band, white armband with the Jewish star. I took it off and I went very far. And it was a curfew, you had to be by 7 o'clock at home. And I went there until I came to the hospital, until they let in a little nothing. I was a very skinny little girl. I went in there and I was looking the list from top, such long lists were hanging there. And I found a Marek Honigman. But I went to the room and there was a little baby. It was not my brother. And I came home and my mother was crying. Where were you? She thought that the German caught me and took me away. But I didn't tell her. And I never told her. And I was looking around and then, short before the holy holidays, my oldest brother came back by himself. There was somehow my two brothers were separated on the road. And he came back and he said, you know what? I was staying at the trolley. We had the trolley coming through. And my brother came off the trolley. And he said, you know what? I didn't want to come home because I heard it's all flattened, it's bombed. Such things were going around. And then 2 days later, my other brother came home. So the holidays were terrible. My father, somehow, he knew he wouldn't have another holiday in that synagogue. Synagogue where this was his place, this was his son's place. Mm. And I was staying outside and watching. They were praying, and I was staying outside with other kids and watching. The Germans shouldn't come in and see whether they were not allowed to pray. But then it started terrible. It's just, my grandfather had to right away shave off his beard.
This was an order of the Germans?
Yeah, pace his beard. He never went out the street because he was wearing Jewish habits and all this thing.
Your father?
My father was clean cut. He mm-hmm. was already a little bit more, but he was very religious. Mm-hmm. He was terrible frightened. He was so frightened. First he was with a leg in a cast. And there was no place where to change the cast. Because it was everything was, you're not allowed to go. And I remember that cast started to itch. You know, that cast. And he opened the little thing and he was scratching it. Eventually he took off the cast after the days where they told him to take off and his leg was crooked. He was limping. So...
What other changes occurred when the Germans entered the town for you?
For me?
Yeah.
First, I didn't work anymore. German took over the store where I was working.
You had to stop your training?
Sure. No school, no nothing for nobody. I had to still... A sister and a brother who were going to school. There was no school for nobody. They shot the principal from the school in the Gentile. They took out like they call it, the intelligentsia, the intelligent people, and they shot them. It didn't matter. There were Poles, so...
They shot them?
Yes.
Where? Was this a mass shooting? Or
it was a mass shooting.
Mm-hmm.
They took everybody, the banker, the doctor, the principal, the teacher, a priest, took him behind in the, where was it, behind the cemetery or somewhere, and they shot him. The rest escaped. Who had a chance? Escaped. And it was day by day living. And
the German soldiers were in the streets?
The German soldiers were everywhere. Mm-hmm. Where it was a big building, where it was something, they took it over and it was their law. You walked in Sandy City, they shot right and left. They saw a woman dressed, a young woman, nice. They made her lie down and cleaned it. I saw it myself, cleaned the pavement with a toothbrush.
This was a Jewish woman?
Yeah, sure. They
did they also do things like this to Poles?
No.
You said they shot some of the Polish intelligentsia.
Just intelligentsia.
The rest of the Polish people were
not. The rest of the Polish people were with him. Mm. The rest of they just everything what they wanted to do.
This is tape one, side two of an interview with Mrs. Hasha Afshower, 9853 Haldeman Avenue, Philadelphia, 19115, on May 10th, 1982, with Josie Fisher. What about food? Were things rationed immediately?
Yes. And you had to, it was black market right away. And if you stayed in the line for the food, if there were Poles in that line who know you, where you grew up with them, you had a chance to get something. But if there was a line for food or for something else where they didn't know you, they recognized right away that you're Jewish. I didn't look Jewish, but they knew right away that it smelled out that I'm Jewish.
Now, were
and
you,
they pushed you out.
Were you not wearing your armband during
If I had a chance not to wear it, I did.
What about your father's butcher shop?
My father didn't have a butcher shop by then. It was a corporation. He worked in that corporation.
Oh, it
was closed.
That was closed?
Nothing.
When?
Right away. September the 3rd was closed. You know, when a country goes to war, mobilization, such things are closed. Right? It was right away turmoil. It was so mixed up. It's just impossible to describe how it was right away mixed up. Kids ran away to Warsaw, people ran away to Warsaw, they were leaving. People were running to other countries. It was, you know, just hard to say how it looked. This house was closed up, this house was closed up. Other people came to the U City, people from U City went someplace else. And then the Germans right away started to evacuate people. They came in at night and they took out a whole building of people and sent them someplace else. I had one girlfriend, I grew up with her from childhood mostly. One day I got up in the morning, they took the whole block of Jews and sent him someplace away. I could never find her. After the war, about a year ago, I found out where she was.
How did you find out?
A friend of ours survived, and he lives in Canada. And he was here, and he was in the city where she was a ghetto there. And I was asking about it. He said she was shot in the street.
At the time, you had no idea where
she
was.
No, I wanted so badly to find out where she was. And you know, they took the father and the mother, and there were two sisters. One died during the war, before the war. And then they sent her away, and I could never find out where she was. And there were a lot of like that. They just made their own term when they took people from here, sent them to this city, took people from there, sent them to that city, and the rest around.
What about the Jewish leadership in large?
The Jewish leadership was... How can I, did I know a lot about it? You see, the whole, how can I tell you? This was the ghetto. That was old Lodz, that, you know, where a city starts, like Center City. Behind that Center City was that ghetto. There were Jews, a lot of Jews there, stuck together. Mm-hmm. The little homes and big homes, they were there. There were the leaders. I lived on the farther down there. You see, like City Hall here, in the northeast here.
So none of the leaders were in your community?
In my none. We just representatives, but they're not leaders.
What did that mean then in terms of your community? Were you cut off from the Jewish leadership? Or did you have some kind of tie through your representatives?
We had some tie, but it was like cut off. It didn't help too much. We were too few for that German power to accomplish something.
You mean that too few in the whole city of Lodz or in your specific
in
area?
In our area.
Mm-hmm.
Too few. So they came, this was 1939, they came in December the 16th. December the 16th, they came, 60 of them SS men, dressed up in the leather coats with such big, how you call it? I forgot. You know, with the gaucho use.
With swords?
Not or swords.
Bayonets?
Not bayonets. Oh, on tip of my tongue, it will come later. Say, all right, they came in and gave us 60 minutes to get out from our house.
Was this your...
Our section.
Your section? The whole section?
The whole section. That they started the ghetto by then. The ghetto started already in Lodz. So it took sections and pushed them to the ghetto.
So you were in December, on December 16th, 1939, this section of the city...
Had to go to the ghetto.
...was evacuated into the Lodz ghetto.
The Lodz ghetto.
Yes.
It was not a ghetto by then. They were pushing all Jews together. Mm-hmm. But my parents, my father came from a different part of Europe. And they had a house there. And this was not the Third Reich. This was called the Protectorate. It was part Poland, part... So my father and mother hired a farmer, a Gentile, with a wagon and two horses, and put how much they could in 60 minutes on that wagon. My brother, the one who passed away, packed anything he could. And I remember we had a little canary, he opened the window, let it out. And what could you pack?
This all happened within this hour that you were supposed to leave.
But a few days before, we know it was not. So my mother made us little sacks to hand the kids, you know, the smaller one. We had a birth certificate, this, a little bit of money, and we wearing this behind our clothes. And
you hung this around your neck.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because we're kids. There were three. I had a little brother and a little sister, and I was the next. I was the middle child. And one sister, my older sister, was married, and she went with her husband and her in-laws. And my oldest brother were with us. And the next one to me. So we got the wagon with the horses, put everything on, and we went. I'll never forget it. It was so cold. It was so slippery. And many wagons went over the road, and you could hear the children screaming, "Mommy, Mommy," at night.
No, you weren't stopped from leaving in this wagon?
No.
Why?
You could have, because it was too soon. You see, lady did it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have gone any place you wanted, just out from there. And not, and when we left, our friends, the Poles, were staying and clapping. Applauding.
These were people that you had known
personally. I grew up with him. So we left there and we went to Częstochowa. From Częstochowa, we were there. I remember January the 1st, my brother and I walked out in Częstochowa. The bells were ringing. That was 1940.
Now, was this where your family home was, or this is on the way?
On the way.
On the way.
On the way. And we knew somebody who had a big farm, a Jew, and that was the Protectorate. And they gave us a corner in the kitchen. So my parents put some the straw sacks, they put there and their belongings. And they were there. Until in the spring, I couldn't stay longer. I went to find my father's relatives where they're in Oberschlesen. That was Oberschlesen. That was in Dombrowa, where my father came from.
This was the area where the house was that you
yes,
were on your
yes.
way to?
So I went there and I met my aunt, my father's sister. And but that was the Third Reich too. I had to smuggle through the border. I went there.
Did you have trouble doing that?
I was a devil. I went through the woods, such deep woods, and the dogs were barking, and the SS were running around like crazy. But it was a little girl.
So you just took off your armband?
Not myself. I had a leader. I had to pay to let me through the border.
But you went without your... Absolutely. Papers?
Nothing. You had to just on your own. And I went in, I met my father's family. And they were very poor people. It was a little town, a hamlet. It was nothing. They lived there. But my father lived in a bigger city. He came from a bigger city. His relatives, his brother's wife with the children lived there. And I came to them because my uncle was dead.
This is in Oberschlesen?
Yes.
Where your father's home was?
My father's home was in Dombrowa.
In Dombrowa.
But before Dombrowa, after the border where I crossed, was a small town, Mishkov. And it was nothing. It's a hamlet, a little piece of nothing. And my aunt with her children lived there, and I came to visit them before I went farther.
Now, the person that you had to pay to cross over this border
was a Pole? Pole, sure, just Pole.
And this kind of thing was going on fairly
constantly, regularly?
Yeah.
And I went and I saw everything, and I was there 6 weeks, and I went back to my parents, to Chernobyl.
Did you feel that you were in danger being there?
No. I just wanted my parents to come to go to the house where my father's. But
what was your purpose in going? To make sure that the family was still there?
To go back?
To see, no. When you went there to begin with, to your father's home area, were you going to make sure that it would be safe for your family?
Well, my father said, there's a house, let's go there, we're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came there, it was my father's sister was an old maid. The house was run down. And Oberschlesen was 99% German.
So you went to assess the situation?
Yes. And I came back and I told my parents how it was. And, you know, they didn't have a... In such situations, you lose your ambition to live, to continue. My father was dragged out in Chernobyl to dig ditches. I have pictures from him there with the armband.
Your photographs?
Yeah. And he felt nothing. He felt here in the lodge he was Mr. Honigman, big thing, and here he's nothing. He lives in a at night he pulled out a straw sack and he lives there. I remember the first Pesach we celebrated in that Chernobyl on that farm. And I remember when my father picked up the first, the bag of wine. He cried.
This was
1940.
This was 1940, and his life had radically changed.
He was always such a strong man, such full of wisdom, full of compassion. But then he just shriveled up.
He was still limping.
He was limping
and in pain from his leg.
And he saw his family falling apart. This was the worst thing.
What do you mean his family falling apart? You mean the children?
Yeah. I was away. My oldest brother he couldn't stay on that farm constantly, so he was a fighter. He was organizing partisans. He was always involved in something. And the brother next to me, He was working in the ditches too. He was a very delicate, very intelligent boy. And he came home broken up. He was only 3 years older than I. So, but that Pesach, my father said, I'll never live to see another Pesach. But he did. Another Pesach was another tourist. So I went back to that Mishkov My father took me to the boss. I remember like today. And he said, remember Chaisur, take care of yourself.
This was after you had come back.
Yeah.
And you advised your parents not to go to this
I didn't
area.
Say not to go. I just came back and I told them the situation, what's there. That in Dombrava, they cannot be. They cannot live there.
Because that was part of...
It was part of... It's Germany and the houses run down. And. But you know what I did? I took my father with me to cross the border to go to see him by himself. And it was, you know, sometimes everything is against you. It was such a storm. It was such a lightning. It was such thundering. And the Germans were crazy running around with those dogs on the border. And my father with that leg, he was crying like a baby. And I took him through that border and brought him to my aunt, to his sister-in-law, in that little hamlet. She almost died that night. We came to the window, we looked at the window because, you know, you were not allowed to knock or something. We were so wet, both of us. And my father saw what's going on and he went back again to the border. He went back to my mother. But then it started, that Chancellor House had a ghetto too. Not a ghetto, they had a camp. And they were pushing everybody again together. So my brother, who was older than me, came to that hamlet where I was. Because I started to smuggle that time. Somebody had to make a living.
You explain this again. You were put by your father into this small border town.
Yeah.
Which was in the protectorate?
Yes.
This was in the protectorate.
No, the small town was where not protectorate. It was Germany.
This was Germany, where you were.
Yes. My father was, my parents were in protectorate.
Now, what was the name of the little village where you were?
Myshkov.
M-I?
M-Y-S-C-K-O-W. Myshkov.
Okay. And you were smuggling. You were living there and
this,
smuggling.
Because this was a little town by the border. There was going on a lot of smuggling there. People had to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So you took... I was a big smuggler. I took 10 pounds of flour, I took it to another city, piece of meat, a piece of that, and you sold it on the black market.
Now, how was the smuggling organized?
By train. You had to go on train.
But who was organizing
this? Nobody organized. Just the Polacks brought from the farm eggs and chickens to the Jews, and they bought it. Then the people came from another city and bought it from the Jews and took it back to the city, and they were selling it this way. I used to put two ducks around here at my waist. It was
ducks,
dead ones,
uh-huh.
You know, and tied around with a string and put on my coat, and I was going on. You had to take the train, and you had to go about 45 minutes by train to a big city called Sosnovyets or Bendin, and there the big black market was going on.
And then you would sell to the Poles?
To the Jews.
You would sell to the Jews?
To the Jews, not to the Poles. Okay. We bought from the Poles.
You bought it from the Poles with your family? The family gave you money to do this? Or?
No, my cousins, the first money what I got, I didn't have any money. My cousin's husband lent me some money. I saw what was going on and my parents needed to eat in that Chanstokhov. So I made money. I lived with my aunt. She took me in. And I made a package and I sent it out by Red Cross to that Chanstokhov, and they got it there.
Through the Red Cross, the Polish
Red
Cross.
Yeah.
And they delivered this to your parents.
My father needed tobacco, saccharin, or something like this. I made the package and sent it out. And I was the smuggler. I was the provider. And my father cried. He said, mine provider. Then it started the ghetto in Chelsea.
How long were you doing this? What?
Oh, I did it until they took me concentration camp.
So about what months? You were, this was 1940?
This was 1940. And I did it until, you see, my parents came to the little hamlet after a while. I did it until they took me in 40, in the middle of 1941. And then the ghetto started, my brother came from Częstochowa to Myszków, through the border, because they were catching boys and putting them in concentration camp. Mm-hmm. But a boy didn't have a chance, and he was staying with my aunt, my father's sister-in-law.
And your family was still back in Chester?
Just my brother came. And he was staying with my aunt, and one day he couldn't go out, and I was again the provider. He needed cigarettes, he needed shaving lotion, something like that. And I gave it to him, and one night was a big, we called it the Oblava Garden, you know, we're catching boys, sending them.
This was called?
Oblava.
Oblava.
Yeah. And they took all the boys.
That was when the Germans would get the boys to go to a work camp or
that's
to...
That's right. And I saw that in my brother ran out from my aunt, and he was running somewhere to hide, they called it. And they took him concentration camp, and I remember like today, I was running after them. And I was begging the Germans to take me to concentration camp that I can be with my brother. And they didn't want it. Then they didn't want it. They took away my brother, and then I'm going to explain to my parents. I'm going to write to them that they took him concentration camp. What'd you do?
Did you know where he was being taken?
Yeah, I know what Markstadt. He was right. He was not in Markstadt. He was, yeah, in Markstadt. It's a concentration.
And you knew that at that time that
he wrote back. He wrote to me.
I see.
He wrote to me, and I sent him packages.
Was it fairly easy during that time then to communicate with family in different parts of Poland,
yeah,
to write
it
letters?
Was not, yeah,
this was not a problem.
It was not bad. Then it started to get bad in when my parents were in Częstochowa. They were making.
This was towards the middle of 1941, or
the end of 40.
The end of 40.
So they went through the border. I sent them some money. They went through the border and they came to Myszków.
And they brought the other children who were
with
them.
Yeah, the two children with them. They didn't have where to live. First, they couldn't be there because they didn't have the registration. They didn't have the Lebenskort, you know, to live, to get bread and milk, and because it was stamps like here, you had it.
How did you get those papers?
I took another name. My name was Andalusia.
This was
I was paid. I paid a German. And they gave me such temporary thing, you know.
Now, was that a non-Jewish identity? You had non-Jewish papers.
Yeah, but I didn't go by it. I was wearing a band.
You wore your band?
Oh, sure.
But you had papers?
Papers. It was papers that were not like in the Jewish, how you say, magistrate, the Jews. You know, if you were in the, like in City Hall, you got your stamp card, you lived on it, you got bread. I didn't get this. I just had the registration that I live here. Mm-hmm. But really, I was not registered there. Can you understand what I mean?
Could you have been registered with these papers?
No. No. I couldn't. I'll tell you later a story about it.
In other words, if someone stopped you on the street, you could use these papers to...
A German, I could show it. A Jew from the Kihila, from those big shots, they knew I wasn't legal because I wasn't registered with them. I didn't exist it.
What was your feeling about the Kihila?
Not too good.
In what way?
They just took care of their own, that's it.
You mean the Jews who were living in their
In
town.
That hamlet, that particular hamlet, there were just family, very close-knit family, one took care of the other one. Outside it, never changed.
So somebody like you, who is a Jew from another town, they would not care
I didn't
for.
Exist. I just had a registration. If somebody stops me in the street, that's it. That's my identification. But if he goes deeper, he will find out that I don't even exist.
Do you think the Kahila was helpful towards its own?
Yes, positively. I went to concentration camp for one of the sisters. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't exist, you see? I wasn't registered. Mm-hmm. So when they caught the sister, they exchanged me for her. I made a deal with it. If they will give food stamps to my parents, if they registered it, I'll go for her in concentration camp. And they did it. When I was in concentration camp already, I wrote to my mother and asked, she didn't know what I did. Because I didn't have to go. I could escape. Because I wasn't registered.
How were your parents living in this village during that time before they were registered?
I was smuggling. I was the provider.
And they weren't questioned? They weren't stopped? They had no papers?
They didn't go out too much.
Did they live with your aunt also?
No. I found him a room in a basement. A basement, not a room. And I had a girlfriend. She passed away a few years ago. And we were going around, we found a bed and a table. They brought with them a little bit of linens, what they still had. They had to sell everything to live. And they came and somehow I organized. Then I went to my aunt, to my father's sister, who lived in Dombrova. And she had linen still there. And I took all those things and I brought it to my parents. And how we could, we furnished them. We could live there.
Was the Kahila in Chestakova helpful in any way to
No,
your parents?
Not to my parents.
Because, again, they were not from the
That's
community.
Right. That's right. So then it started to get harder to smuggle. Mm. Every time the train came to the Bendine, where it was the main city where all the smugglers got off, the SS was waiting there, grabbed them, sent them concentration camp. Somehow I escaped twice. I was lying in a ditch all night long, and then in the morning I got up and walked away with the other ones they took in concentration camp. But it started to get bad and bad and bad. And my father and my sister went again to dig ditches, and they got paid a little bit.
Now, digging ditches, they didn't need to show any kind of papers
no,
during that
No,
time?
They didn't need it. So they paid him something there. But I always could manage something to bring home. Mm-hmm. Then it came, they caught me in concentration camp. They came, they didn't, they sent out like invitations. Each home, you would say this and this name, you come to this point, to this hall, I mean. They go in concentration camp.
Now, who sent out that invitation?
The Germans.
The Kahila was not involved
no,
in,
Kahila
in
was not
the numbers.
No. So, it came, I was registered as Andalusia, living at my aunt's house. So a letter came there to her, but there was no Andalusia, so I didn't have to go. But I was walking in the street, and two SS caught me. They stopped me and put me in that same place with the rest of them.
You had your band on?
Oh, yeah. That time I didn't look Jewish. I had my braids around here, so I looked like a German. I spoke a good German, a good Polish. So anytime I had a chance, I took off my band. But they caught me and brought me in there, and I could escape. I could walk out like anybody because it was not guarded. So, you know, it's a little hamlet. Where would they go? But then one from the Kehillah came to me and said, look, they knew that I was not legally in that place. He said, my sister was called to go to concentration camp. I said, I know, she's here. I knew her. She was my girlfriend, my same age. But she was she lived there all her life, and I was a newcomer. And I said, look, I'll make a deal with you. If you register my parents and give them the food stamps, like anybody else, I'll go for your sister in concentration camp. And they did. Then she's not alive.
The sister didn't live.
No, didn't have a chance.
And she was deported later?
I don't know where she died. I think in Auschwitz she died. Mm. But I went to concentration.
But the Kehillah kept up their side of the bargain.
Yes, because you see, somehow when I came to concentration camp, I kept myself nice.